From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. A recent report from the Florida Medical Examiner's Commission finds that for the first half of 2015, the state's 12th Judicial Circuit experienced the fourth highest number of heroin-related deaths in Florida. That includes DeSoto, Manatee, and Sarasota counties. The problem is particularly bad in Manatee County. We'll explore what's behind these trends in drug overdose deaths, law enforcement actions, and public education and outreach efforts aimed at addressing the problem. Plus, last month, the Southern Poverty Law Center filed a lawsuit against the Collier County School District alleging immigrant teens have been denied admission in violation of state and federal law. The district contends students were behind academically, were not proficient in English, and that enrolling them in regular high school would have set them up for failure. We'll take a closer look. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Last month, the Southern Poverty Law Center filed a lawsuit against the Collier County School District on behalf of three immigrant teens, alleging they were illegally denied enrollment in Immokalee High School and instead were offered an adult English language program. SPLC attorneys argue the district's actions violate state and federal law, as well as the 14th Amendment. General counsel for the school district stated in a letter last fall that given the students' academic progress and lack of English proficiency, placing them in regular high school courses amounts to setting them up for failure, and that the students could still earn a diploma through an adult secondary education program. We'll take a closer look later this hour. But first, the Florida Medical Examiner's Commission's semi-annual Drugs Identified in Deceased Persons by Florida Medical Examiner's Report finds that Florida's 12th Judicial Circuit, which includes DeSoto, Manatee, and Sarasota counties, had the fourth highest number of heroin-related deaths in the state for the first half of 2015. The issue of drug-related deaths has been particularly bad in Manatee County, which established itself as the heroin capital of Florida in 2014, with the highest per capita rate of deaths related to heroin, fentanyl, and cocaine of any county in the state. Early indicators predict that 2016 will see those numbers improve, but what's been behind the increase in drug-related deaths in the region in recent years, and how are law enforcement and other government agency actions helping to address the problem? Joining me now for a closer look is Dr. Russell Vega. He's chief medical examiner for Florida's 12th Judicial Circuit. Last fall, Governor Rick Scott appointed Dr. Vega to the Florida Violent Crime and Drug Control Council. Dr. Vega, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're also speaking with Captain Todd Shear with the Manatee County Sheriff's Office Special Investigations Division. Captain Shear, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me, John.
And we're joined by Marib Favorite. She's the Communications Coordinator for the Manatee County Substance Abuse Prevention Coalition, or Drug-Free Manatee. She's also a former police beat reporter for the Charlotte Sun. Thanks for your time today as well.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
I also invite listeners to join the conversation and connect with our guests with your comments and questions. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or tweet using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Dr. Vega, let's begin with you. First of all, tell us a bit more about this latest semi-annual Drugs Identified in Deceased Persons by Florida Medical Examiner's report. Were you surprised that the 12th Judicial Circuit ranked fourth highest in the state for heroin-related deaths, or has this been kind of a part of a growing problem for the region?
Well, if you'd asked me that question 2 years ago, I probably would have been very surprised. Mm. But as we saw in 2014, a really pretty marked uptick in those kind of deaths when compared to previous years, that the fact that 2015 sort of continued on that same trend was not as big a surprise. I am sure that most of your listeners would probably be surprised to hear that based on, I guess, the overall sort of population that we have here, the kind of communities that we have on Florida's southwest coast, and the fact that we're comparing that with some other very larger, more urban areas in Florida. And you think of Tampa, Jacksonville, Miami, Orlando, where our problem is just as bad or worse, and on a per capita basis, as you suggested, is worse than almost all those areas.
Right. For the period of time this report covers, you know, Miami is one of the regions that ranked higher, but only by about 6 deaths. And that's like a major metropolitan area compared to the more, you know, less densely populated, more rural region of the 12th Judicial Circuit. When did you first start noticing an increase in the number of heroin or other drug-related deaths? And how do recent numbers compare to what your office was experiencing, say, in the early 2000s?
Well, if you look at drug deaths overall, you know, our area did have a big spike in prescription drug deaths led by oxycodone or OxyContin that really peaked in about 2010. And as those deaths started to decline, our overall death rate from drug overdose also was declining. With regard to heroin and its close cousin fentanyl, those drugs, for most of the last decade, we've seen deaths in our district, in the three counties of Sarasota, Manatee, and DeSoto, that were in the single digits. In 2013, we saw a slight increase up to, I think, about 13 deaths in the district. And then 2014 saw a sort of the beginning of the explosion, probably in the middle of 2014, where we really started to see an increase in primarily heroin deaths. And that was followed later by an increase in deaths from fentanyl, which is a long-used pain relief medication, a sort of synthetic version of heroin, if you will.
And Captain Scheer, I'd like to bring you into the conversation at this time. You know, Dr. Vega has alluded to Florida's, I guess, what's been a very successful crackdown on pill mills and the availability of prescription drugs on the street. But would you characterize that effort as having been so successful that, you know, drugs like heroin simply just became more popular and more available after that?
Sure, without question. The legislative changes in 2012 and what we're seeing, as Dr. Vega just detailed out in the statistics there, certainly show the nexus between the two. We've closed the gap on prescription crimes, and as you said, there's a void created by those people that are addicted to opioids, OxyContin, hydromorphone, morphine, and those types of drugs, and people look to the streets to find that fill, and heroin steps onto the scene, and it's actually even cheaper than what the addicts can get for pills on the street.
Mm. And Captain Scheer, I know we're going back a few years here, but can you tell us a bit about the Manatee County Sheriff's Office involvement in this, you know, inter-law enforcement agency, you know, widespread crackdown on pill mills? Was there a lot of that kind of activity going on in Manatee County?
No, it's just like Dr. Vega said, it was something that pretty much we, you know, looking back, we can see it. It started to progress significantly back in the late 2014. And we deployed several strategies at that particular time, early 2015. And as we responded, our patrol deputies were responding to a massive amount of overdoses. I think our department alone, which doesn't include the police departments, we responded to around 561 overdoses. And unfortunately, many of those, I think about 10% of those ended up being fatal. And we continue to respond to them, and it certainly put it on the radar, particularly last year in 2015. Our peak month was July, in which we had 165 overdoses that we responded to. Unfortunately, 14 of those resulted in death. So it certainly it was right there in our face, and we deployed several investigative strategies to try to do what we could do from a law enforcement standpoint. Law enforcement itself cannot arrest their way out of this problem. It's a totally a community approach to this epidemic, and we've seen some breakthroughs. We're seeing some progress.
And does the sheriff's office there, I know we've recently seen an increase in the availability of naloxone, you know, brand name Narcan, which has been, you know, can be very effective in stopping someone from dying from, you know, an opioid overdose. Is that something that sheriff's officers have access to?
We don't here at the Manatee County Sheriff's Office. It has expanded. The governor signed something into law where it's going to be actually held in pharmacies, and you can actually get a prescription. If a friend of yours is an addict, you can actually get a prescription yourself. The fire department has expanded. They have it right now. In our unique area, it's very, very rare. We looked at the statistics and the numbers. It's very rare for us that being law enforcement, to get to a scene before a fire or EMS. But other counties have, in fact, gotten naloxone.
Dr. Vega, would you say, you know, the increasing availability of naloxone has or will have an effect in the future on reducing the rate of these kinds of deaths?
Well, I certainly hope so. And the evidence that we have from our colleagues in law enforcement and what we see from the reports of emergency medical responders, it certainly suggests that there's been an improvement in effect that this availability has had. Now, unfortunately, you know, we still are seeing deaths, but if you look at, say, the very end of 2015 and the first couple of months of 2016, and I only go for the first couple of months in 2016 because we don't really have good data following that, because we're still waiting on the completion of those cases and the analysis we have to do to find the drugs. But if you look at that time period, it definitely looks like we are slowing down in terms of the total number of deaths from heroin and fentanyl that we are seeing. So absent a better explanation, I think, yeah, the availability of the resuscitation drugs, the Narcan, is making a big difference.
And I know we don't have those numbers just yet for the second half of 2015. That may be several months away, I imagine. But do you anticipate that those are going to show a decline, or do you think we're really only going to start to see the decline, you know, as you said, sort of in those first months of 2016?
I think they will show a slight decline, but most of what we saw really didn't start to happen until close to the end of 2015. And I mean what we saw in terms of the decline in these death rates. So I think 2015 will still show overall very robust numbers. I can tell you from the numbers that we have for our district that the total deaths from all of 2015 are almost complete. We only have really one case left that we're waiting for some complex drug testing to be completed. And we're still looking at a total of almost about 150 deaths that will be due to either heroin or fentanyl or the two drugs combined. So that's still a pretty hefty number, and sort of in line with the total number of deaths that we had seen for the first half of 2015. But I do think that when we start to see the numbers from 2016, they will definitely they'll continue this trend that we started to see at the end of 2015 of a decrease in these deaths.
Can you talk to how that's impacted, you know, the workload for the staff in your office? I know at some point in the last couple of years, you'd actually requested a budget increase just to handle the growing number of cases. And at that time, you were on pace to exceed your annual autopsy total by around 200.
We did. For 2015, it was by far the busiest year we've ever had. We had a total of 240 deaths that were attributed to drugs in one way or another. Of those, about 150 or a little bit more were due to heroin or fentanyl, but we're still seeing a lot of deaths from cocaine. The other prescription drugs that we had seen before are still out there. We're not seeing them in quite the same numbers, but they are still causing death. And yes, that autopsy number that we had for 2015 was almost 200 more than we had seen for 2014, and that's a full doctor's workload for the year right there. So we really weren't able to manage that workload without increasing our staff. So we did make that budget request, and fortunately, we were able to attain the funds we need to be able to staff appropriately for that caseload.
Right. We're exploring the rate of drug-related deaths in Florida's 12th Judicial Circuit, including Manatee, Sarasota, and DeSoto counties, and how law enforcement and other government agencies are responding. We're speaking with Chief Medical Examiner Dr. Russell Vega, along with Manatee County Sheriff's Office Captain Todd Shear, and Marib Favorite with the Drug-Free Manatee. I invite listeners to connect with our guests and join the conversation. Call 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Send email to GulfCoastLive@WGCU.org or tweet using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Dr. Vega, the 12th Judicial Circuit had more deaths from fentanyl overdose in the first half of 2015 than any other judicial circuit in the state, regardless of population. What do you think accounts for this? How long has fentanyl been perhaps a problem on your radar?
Well, we've seen deaths from fentanyl ever since I've been working as a medical examiner 20 years now. In the past, the only fentanyl that we saw was diverted from pharmaceutical preparations. Almost all that was in transdermal patches, pain relief patches that mostly cancer and truly chronic pain sufferers would use to relieve their pain, and they'd put on a patch a day or every 2 days or however they would be prescribed. Those patches would get abused by taking the medication from them and somehow putting it into the body. We'd see a small handful of those cases every year. It wasn't until 2014 that we started suddenly seeing this uptick in fentanyl deaths, and as we saw this increase, we became aware that they were overlapping with the deaths that were occurring due to heroin. They were the same, essentially the same population that we were seeing of people who were overdosing on heroin were overdosing on fentanyl, and our law enforcement colleagues, I'm sure Captain Shear can tell you that this was because they were getting it the same way. We weren't seeing pharmaceutical fentanyl anymore. We were seeing illicitly obtained and synthesized drug on the street, just like heroin. And at some point in 2015, the numbers actually started to reverse, and we saw more deaths from fentanyl actually than we did from heroin, and that trend has continued pretty much until this time.
Captain Shear, tell us a bit more about your experiences, law enforcement experiences with removing fentanyl from the streets. Is this something that drug seekers will typically look for themselves, or are the people that they're buying it from, are they cutting heroin with fentanyl, perhaps unbeknownst to the buyer or the user?
Well, actually both. John, we've had both scenarios. We have people where their addiction is so great and that their continual use of heroin is just not getting them the same high that it once did get for them. And then when they get a taste of fentanyl, if you will, they actually go out there and they seek it. They want that stuff on the street. What they call it on the street is fire. They're looking for the fire because they know that it's a more intense high for them, and it can get them, a little bit better euphoric feeling than the heroin can. So they actually, some of our addicts out there are actually seeking that. And then there's some scenarios where we just had one not too long ago where we are working in an undercover capacity and our undercovers are buying heroin, what they think is heroin. They come back, we test it, it's heroin, and then the next time we go to buy, we think it's heroin. It doesn't test at all for heroin. We got to run it over to our chemist, and our chemist tests it and says, "Oh no, this is a fentanyl mixture. 90% of it's fentanyl and cut with some other agents, sometimes Xanax, some other deadly combinations." So we get a little bit of both.
But it's actually being sold as heroin, even though it's not.
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
If I can add something,
yes,
here too,
Dr. Vega.
That's especially a problem because even though they're both similar acting narcotics, fentanyl is much, much more potent than heroin. So if somebody's taking that in an amount that they think is appropriate for a heroin dose, and they're really injecting mostly or all fentanyl, the likelihood that they're going to overdose on that amount of drug is very high. So it makes it a very risky proposition. I mean, it's always risky when you're putting any substance in your body and you don't really know what it is, but if they think it's heroin and it's really fentanyl or a fentanyl mixture, it really puts them at great risk for an overdose event or death.
And I don't mean to get too morbid here, but I was hoping, Dr. Vega, you could tell us a bit about how drugs like heroin and fentanyl actually do kill people. What is actually going on? What causes the death?
Yeah, these drugs are central nervous system depressants, and they act directly on centers in the brain to decrease brain function in many ways. The most prominent ones are in the respiratory centers of the brainstem and in some of the consciousness areas of the brain. So they will reduce level of consciousness to the point of coma, and they will suppress the drive to breathe in the brainstem. So once the levels get high enough, the person essentially stops breathing. And that's what the lethal mechanism is in most cases of these narcotic overdoses.
Wow. Does one's respiratory capacity or rate, is that impacted by these drugs? Even if you're taking them as prescribed by a physician for a legitimate pain issue, would you experience like a more shallow respirations, perhaps, maybe not dangerous, but...
Yes, absolutely. All of these things occur to some extent regardless of the dose, and the dose dependency of the effect means that the more that's in the bloodstream, the more pronounced those effects are. The other way that these drugs act in the lungs is they make the blood vessels in the lungs leakier so that the lungs tend to accumulate fluid in them, making them less functional for breathing. So you have a decreased respiratory drive, so you're not breathing as deeply or as often. Plus, you're not able to do the gas exchange in your lungs, you know, breathe in the oxygen and let out the carbon dioxide that you're supposed to. So the combination of those two things makes your respiratory function easily compromised by the drugs in the system.
I invite listeners to join our conversation as we explore recent trends in drug-related deaths in DeSoto, Manatee, and Sarasota counties. We're speaking with the Chief Medical Examiner for Florida's 12th Judicial Circuit, Dr. Russell Vega. We're also talking with Manatee County Sheriff's Office Captain Todd Shear with the Special Investigations Division. And we're joined by Marib Favorite with the Manatee County Substance Abuse Prevention Coalition, or Drug-Free Manatee. Connect with our guests and add your comments and questions to the conversation. Phone lines are open at 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live or send us a message on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. And Captain Shear, back in September of last year, I saw a video recorded by the Bradenton Herald of an interview with you where you had talked about the sheriff's office having removed more than 620 grams of heroin off the streets out of a value of about $62,000. Can you give us any updates on that progress, or is this something that's just sort of constantly going on with your ongoing investigations?
Yeah, I don't have any of those specific numbers, but I can assure you of this. Those numbers in September have grown significantly, and we continue to deploy the same types of strategies we did way back in the beginning of last year, which included, you know, short-term and long-term investigations. We concluded one at the end of, in the earlier part of this year. We had a press conference with our friends at the Drug Enforcement Administration, our local law enforcement partners with Bradenton, Sarasota, of an 18-month investigation where we made over 20 arrests, seized somewhere around the neighborhood of $500,000, took a lot of heroin and fentanyl off the streets. And unfortunately, some of these investigations we just can't talk about because they're ongoing. And our objective here in law enforcement and our intent is to apprehend those folks that are trafficking narcotics, those people that are bringing narcotics into our community, who don't care anything about how it destroys families and destroys people's lives. They're in it for the monetary makeup. And we can trace these all the way back, in some of our cases, all the way back to the Mexican cartels. And it's our objective to, as I say, cut the head of the snake off. And that's where the source of supply is coming in, through Mexico, a lot of these cases. Some of it, particularly fentanyl, we know is coming in through China, India, through Canada. Canada has an extremely big problem when it comes to fentanyl. They're pill pressing fentanyl and shipping it to the United States. So we're aggressive, not just from a international point of view, but also from a local standpoint. We deploy several different units to handle street mid-level or low-level dealers, and all the way up through the chain of command, if you will, folks that are in other countries delivering those illegal narcotics to our communities. So we're staying pretty aggressive on that, and I can assure you that even though as we're very glad to see these numbers, these overdoses go down significantly, but one death's too much, one overdose is too much, and we're going to continue to be aggressive in our approach, particularly focusing on those that are trafficking narcotics. One of the things that we're trying to also do is we continually try to educate our community. So when we come across someone who's suffering from the disease of addiction, we give them the resources to get the help they need. That for us in Manatee County would be Centerstone, they're one of our mental health and substance abuse flagship organizations that help folks. And all our law enforcement officers are equipped with education, first of all, and information cards. We call them Your Life Matter cards. And it's just simply a simple card telling folks what the first steps they need to take in order to get help if they really want to get away from this very, very addictive drug, because this is not a drug that you can just, you know, say, I'm going to cold turkey it, in 7 days I'll be fine. I mean, you can't white knuckle this type of an addiction. Mm-hmm. You're going to need help. It's a day-to-day thing, and in some cases you're going to have to get medically assisted treatment and really get some help. So as a law enforcement, from a law enforcement perspective, we're very aggressive in making sure the folks get the help they need and then focusing on those folks that are trafficking narcotics in our community.
Captain Scher, I was hoping you could speak, you know, maybe more in general terms. We certainly wouldn't want you to, you know, compromise any current or future investigations here. But just tell us a bit more about what's involved in this undercover work. I would imagine for the officers actually doing it, you know, it's a lot more than just going to work and coming home at night. This becomes your life.
Yes, it becomes your life, and it depends what type of we utilize quite a bit of intelligence. There's electronic intelligence, there's human intelligence, and a lot of sources of information that report to us. We have the Crime Stoppers 1-800 number, where we receive a lot of tips. People call the sheriff's office, for example. John, you go to a gas station today, it's 95 degrees, it's real, real humid out, and you see somebody standing next to a gas pump who looks maybe disoriented. He's got a winter coat on or a hoodie on, and it's 95 degrees out, and he looks pale to the skin, and it might be something suspicious, might not be anything at all. But when we have the community who calls law enforcement and says, you know, something doesn't look right, and the law enforcement officer stops by and has an interaction with the person, and you find out this person's an addict, they're waiting for their drug dealer to come there, they don't want them to come there, and they're looking and seeking for help, well, that law enforcement officer is equipped, they're educated, they can get this person the help they need. So that's just one avenue in which we are trying to help combat these folks that are bringing narcotics to our community.
Captain Scher, have you yourself gone undercover in these kinds of drug investigations?
Many moons ago. I've been with the Sheriff's Office almost 21 years now, and my first tour of duty, I spent 2 years in street-level narcotics, which is doing hand-to-hand deals with folks that are selling, and then also another 2 years in a mid-level position where we focused on people that are moving a lot of significant types of narcotics into the community. So I have done that. I also participate and go out on operations that are run out of my office pretty much daily. We unfortunately, there's not a shortage of business around here when it comes to the bringing of narcotics into our community and those surrounding us.
Can you maybe give us some examples of the great lengths that traffickers will go to conceal their methods?
Well, there's no question about it. They go to a lot of lengths to do that. They do counter surveillance. Sometimes the laws are stacked up in their favor, and it makes it very difficult for us to be able to do surveillance on them. They have a lot of means, which I don't really want to discuss on the radio,
of course,
they do to make our job a lot more difficult. But that's okay. That just means we got to do our job better. It means we've got to do everything we can for the community, because the community is paying our salary. And we work very hard to make sure that we get not just a good case, but a great case that we can take to the state attorney, and we can certainly take to a trial to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that this person is trafficking illegal narcotics, and it's a detriment to our community. And listen, John, I live in this community, and I have a very young daughter. And I don't want my daughter being brought up in a community where overdoses are rampant, the drug opportunities there to get these narcotics are easily accessible. It's something I take personal. It's something that my detectives here in this office take personal. And we do everything we can to catch these folks that are bringing narcotics in here. And if they get caught, they're gonna pay a price. They're gonna do some serious prison time.
All right. And let's turn our attention a little bit. Marib Favorite with a drug-free Manatee. To start off, I was hoping you could just tell me a bit about what's motivated you to work with drug-free Manatee in the first place, because I think like Captain Scher, you yourself have a new young child, too.
I do. I have a 14-month-old and also another one on the way. And I worked with the Charlotte Sun as a cops reporter, so I was seeing a lot of this, you know, bad news every single day, something awful is happening. And so it's really nice to be on the prevention end of things.
Sure. Can you tell us generally about, you know, the work and mission of Drug-Free Manatee?
Sure. Well, basically, we're just out to kind of promote wellness throughout the community. But one thing I did want to mention in regards to the opioid epidemic that we've seen was we convened what we called the Addictions Crisis Task Force. It had multiple disciplines that dealt with this type of crisis from all different aspects of the county. Captain Shear was actually part of it. One thing that came out of that was we started doing practitioner workshops for doctors, nurses, and EMS personnel, and just kind of training them on, you know, how to safe prescribing practices for opioids. Captain Shear mentioned the Your Life Matters cards. We actually print those for first responders to give to people who they feel that might be fighting addiction so that they can find help. We created a media campaign that was largely successful. We have a commercial on Bright House, which kind of promotes the Good Samaritan Act, where if someone calls and reports an overdose, just letting them know that they're not going to get in trouble. It's just the person's life that law enforcement officers are really concerned with. That actually won an Addy Award, which is an American Advertising Award. Through that task force, we also found policy changes, and Captain Shear can probably speak a little bit more to that, but to do with the practices of law enforcement agencies around the county, how they dealt with the overdoses when responding. Another thing to come out of that was we're now getting a receiving facility. Centerstone has expanded. They actually got a grant to expand the number of beds at their site.
And I've got a tweet came in for us with a question. What recommendations do you have for family members of heroin addicts?
For family members of heroin addicts, I would just say to be patient. You know, it's not something like I was mentioned earlier. It's not something that just happens overnight. It's a lot of work to overcome addiction, and that's why we really focus on prevention, because when you prevent it, it's a lot easier to prevent it than it is to solve it, basically.
Right, right. And I know Drug-Free Manatee will be hosting a day-long Drug Endangered Children Symposium at the Manatee Technical College main campus, and that's just coming up next Monday, June 13th. Tell us about that event.
Okay, well, one of the things that to come out of ACT, which I mentioned a moment ago, is that we found out that from one of our partners, the Family Safety Alliance, that there are over 900 kids receiving protective services. And substance use is one of the top three reasons why the state or the county intervenes in those cases. So we hired some national trainers to come in, and basically we have over 150 people signed up. And what they're going to do, they're from all different sectors, law enforcement, judicial, child protective services, and they're coming together to train to better work together and overcome some of the hurdles that pop up when you have these segmented sectors and organizations.
Right. And Drug-Free Manatee will be launching a couple new initiatives this fall. Tell us about those.
Okay. Well, I'd like to just point out that, you know, when you're working, when you're hearing this stuff on the news, it's kind of like gloom and doom. And you start to think that, you know, this is the norm. And really, it's not the norm. I mean, there's still a lot of good parents out there. There's still a lot of good kids out there. And so one of our new initiatives is celebrating the kids that aren't doing drugs. And we know from the Florida Substance Abuse Youth Survey that the majority of kids in Manatee County are really making the right choices. So we're launching a drug-free youth initiative. It's aimed at teens. And basically, if they become a member, they have to take a drug test. And when they become a member, they get incentives for remaining drug-free. So they get discounts at local retail shops. They also get, we do like special events for them. And one thing we're doing, this actually launched in Northport, and it's been really successful there. They have over 1,900 members. And one of the things that we're doing differently here in Manatee County is we're actually going to help them get hired for a job. So we're giving them hiring preference, internships, and apprenticeships through local businesses. We're going to host DeFi-only job fairs, and that's just to kind of give these kids like a purpose and something to do when they're not at school, you know, keep them clean and keep them making healthy choices.
All right, all right. Well, that is unfortunately all the time we have for this portion of the program, but thanks so much to my guests. We've been speaking with Marib Favorite, Communications Coordinator for the Manatee County Substance Abuse Prevention Coalition, or Drug-Free Manatee. Captain Todd Shear is with the Manatee County Sheriff's Office Special Investigations Division, and Dr. Russell Vega is Chief Medical Examiner for Florida's 12th Judicial Circuit, including DeSoto, Manatee, and Sarasota counties. Great speaking with you all today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
We're taking a short break, but when we return, last month, the Alabama-based Southern Poverty Law Center filed suit against the Collier County School District, alleging the district violated state statute, federal law, and the 14th Amendment by not allowing three immigrant students to enroll in Immokalee High School. The district has stated that the students were offered adult English language education and that placing them in a regular high school would have simply been setting them up to fail. We'll take a closer look at the suit just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to WGCU NPR for Southwest Florida.